Welcome back to Conscious Success, the podcast where we teach you how to master your mind, expand your wealth, and enhance your health. I'm your host, Madhu. I was a celibate monk on my 18th birthday, and I lived that way for 5 years. After graduating the monkhood, I went from having no possessions to my name to creating multiple international successful businesses. And now I have the fortune of teaching many others how to do the same. This podcast is here to give you all this knowledge for free and show you how to implement it into your life without having to move to India and shave your head and try to become a monk. Today, I'm joined with a deep inspiration in my life, Jonavie Harrison, who's not only a friend, but somebody that shows me how to live an authentic yet successful life. She has created music that has moved the hearts of so many around the world, and she herself shows us how we can take our gifts and then authentically present them in the world so that we can change the lives of others. Jonavie, I am so excited to connect with you today and talk about things that are kind of edgy, talk about things that are edgy but relatable and practical so that anyone can actually start to develop the mindset around giving and contributing, but in a very authentic way. Because when I think of you, I think of somebody who embodies authenticity and honesty, and you're able to go to a deep place with people and then hold them in that space. And I mean, I feel emotional when I listen to your music.
Thank you.
I mean, those not familiar with your music, I mean, I feel like they're totally missing out. And my first question to you is, when I was a child, I used music as an escape. And so it was like to escape the scary world around me, I would go and get into music. What was it in your childhood that inclined you towards music in general?
What a great question. Music was just always there in my childhood. And, you know, growing up in a spiritual community that shared prayer music as our, you know, it was like the core practice that was interwoven throughout the course of a day. So that was always there. But then I think my parents love music too. My dad's a wonderful singer. My mom loves singing too. She loves harmonizing, and there was always music at home, in a non sort of formal way, you know, just that we loved music and singing together. And then I remember, you know, again, because of my parents' chosen spiritual path and their values, they weren't so keen on us listening to the radio and, like, you know, getting really engaged with just like pop culture at that time at a very young age.
Sure.
And so I found that I was really fascinated by all different kinds of music. So I, you know, not having that as an input, I became really interested in classical music, in jazz, in Irish folk music, Indian classical music, and also, what was the other one? Klezmer music, traditional Jewish music of Eastern Europe and Russia, because my mom comes from a Jewish background.
Interesting.
So there were so many things I would listen to, and I think it was a type of escapism too. It used to transport me to another world, and also to the, you know, with certain music that's very specific to a certain composer, you kind of connect with the person who's behind that music, the author of that music. So I don't know, like, I feel like I got lost in another world there thinking about all my music experiences as a child.
I mean, beautiful. A super vast exploration too. I mean, it's like, I mean, what a expansive, there's like smorgasbord of sorts of like different types of musics and backgrounds of music. So you were more surrounded by, let's just say, eclectic sounds, be it from a spiritual tradition, you also, all three of us here, we're raised in the bhakti tradition, which is more based around, spiritual sound vibrations that we put into the mind.
Yeah.
But you then expanded out into more types and varieties of music.
Yeah.
And you said, I mean, everything from jazz to Indian classical.
Yeah.
When I think of your style, I think of kind of a fusion. I mean, do you consider your music to be more fusion based, or is there a more of a direction that you take it in?
I think my music is very much, it's a blend of expression of myself and what I what I like the sound of, the things that I've listened to over the years, and then a desire to bridge the world of maybe traditional spiritual music of the bhakti tradition that I grew up with and the greater world, whether that be the Western world, you know, so to speak, Western culture, or just anyone who's not really familiar with that space. It's been somewhat of an intuitive kind of journey. It's not always been exactly like, you know, here's a strategy. I'm going to bridge these two worlds. It's kind of, I suppose it's pretty much what's within me as well, because I had all this input of, you know, spiritual tradition that has come from India from a very young age, but also grew up in England and, all that entails. So,
I'm fascinated because both of us, we grew up around culture, but we grew up around kirtan culture.
Oh yeah.
which, for those of you not familiar with kirtan, literally it's a Sanskrit term that indicates ancient sound vibrations that invoke divinity's presence. Mm-hmm. As a crazy oversimplification that is, but we grew up around kirtan, but we weren't really into it at all. And even as a musician, I mean, what was your experience with growing up around kirtan? You weren't super into it, right?
No, I very much wasn't into it. Actually, I went on one, it was a bhakti bus tour, youth bus tour. And I remember, like, you know, we would be in the car and they'd be doing kirtan or they would be chanting japa, which is just private meditation of mantras. And I would put my headphones in. And I was like, this is not my
thing. Put on some Drake.
By the end of that trip, I was very much into it. But in the beginning, I was not into it at all. So
I had the same experience where it was like, because my father, your parents are such wonderful musicians, your whole family actually, which I had the fortune to meet them all. My dad also is a musician, but I thought it was the weirdest thing. Like, why are you chanting these? Can't you do? Like, I remember, like, trying
play
to
play with guitar.
Yeah, I would play guitar. He would do harmonium.
Okay,
and I would be upstairs with the guitar, trying to like play my Red Hot Chili Peppers louder.
Yeah.
It's like, what are you doing? And so my curiosity is being surrounded by it.
Yeah,
we went in the other direction. I think it's maybe even more typical that it's like, oh, this is my parents, and this is weird.
Yeah,
what made you then want to almost solely go into kirtan in your career?
Again, you know, a very roundabout journey. I mean, I think I would say that as a child, I wasn't not into it, but I wasn't into it. Sure. You know, like you see some kids these days and they're like, I'm so into kirtan. And I'm like, okay, I really wasn't like that. I mean, it was just something that, it was something that was a part of my life that I sort of took for granted. It was always there. I think my dad being the leader of kirtan that he is as a singer, he has a very powerful voice, and that was definitely, you know, sort of an anchor in my early life of relating with what kirtan is. It was the sound of his voice and the way that he would facilitate that was very joyous. It was not. Many times, at least in the modern day, when people encounter kirtan, there's a lot of sitting down and maybe it's more meditative. At this time, it was very, always standing up, dancing. Dance and music were fused together. That was, you know, that was a given. But I remember, I was always artistic. I was always attracted to art and drama and music and writing, all the arts, really. I was kind of there for all of it. but I didn't see myself as a singer, definitely not. I did not sing in front of people. People would be like, oh, so can you sing like your dad? And I'd be like, leave me alone. You know? I remember one specific time when I was a teenager and we happened to be at the temple on a day that we weren't normally there. I think it was a Sunday when more people are often there. And there was a special kirtan happening that day and my mom had to do something. And she said, do you want to just sit in there for a bit and I'll come back and get you like in half an hour and we'll go home? And I said, yeah, okay. And I went and sat, and then I just remember she came back to get me and I said, can I stay for a bit longer? And then she came, you know, a couple times back and I kept saying, I'll stay for a bit. And I just remember that being a moment where I was like observing myself and being like, what's going on here? Like, I don't remember you. I don't remember this, like thinking. And I remember also because we were sitting down, it was I felt I'm getting something from this, but I can't quite put my finger on what is it about it, because I've always had this in my life, but I'm experiencing it in a different way right now.
If you've ever considered having a podcast, especially if you're expert at what you do, I cannot suggest more highly using Podigy's service, which is what we use. If you like this production here, I highly suggest you reach out to Podigy through their contact in the show notes below to run and host your podcast. I went through a bunch of different teams, tried a bunch of different things. No one came close to what I got post-production from Podigy, and even just making a launch easy, taking your content, sharing it, making it presentable. Please check out Podigy. If you're great at what you do and you've ever considered having a podcast, I really am excited for you to try them out as well. It's like it actually went deep. It was there, but then it somehow like sunk into the heart.
Something. Yeah. Enough for me to not be like, yeah, I want to go home, you know, which is something as a teenager, Yeah.
The hook entered, per se.
Yeah.
And you're quite withdrawn and introverted. And typically, you don't strike me as the type of person that's super like, yeah, I want to get on stage in front of tons of people and give me the camera.
No. I was used to being on stage as in plays, in dramas, and also as a dancer. I actually trained in dance for many, many years till I was about 22, 23 years old. And that was my main performance medium, and in that medium you're presenting as somebody else, or you're holding a certain role on the stage, but you're not, I feel like you're very naked when you sing on stage. It's sort of the raw self, whereas with most other things you might have a costume, you might have stage makeup, you know. So I did not plan this at all. It is one of those things where I think I really had a desire to express myself artistically, and to do that in a way that was bringing peace, love, spiritual upliftment to people. Hmm. I didn't know what that meant. I mean, I thought probably I'd either be a writer or some kind of visual art. Hmm. And it was sort of, but I'd always studied the violin. It was just like this weird winding path. And then it was really a case of like doors opening, and you walk through a door, and then you walk that way a little, and then you're like, okay, I guess I'll walk a little farther, a little farther, a little farther. Otherwise, I don't think I could have been doing something like this, because by my nature, I would have been like, no, I'm not going to sing in front of people and record, you know, compose music, and I don't know.
It was more of a divine arrangement. It was just like
It feels like, because I certainly resisted it a lot and tried to turn away from it a lot, in a way thinking that, you know, this is nice, but, and I'm glad I could do this, but, you know, I'm still in my early 20s, but I need to find like a regular job that's like, you know, what your type of thing your parents want you to do, so that you're having a stable life of some sort. And yeah, I had opportunities and doors that opened that I didn't walk through, and I noted that, oh, you know, like I got a job as the editor of an arts magazine, and I accepted it, and I had a few kirtan and the events just before I was meant to go back and take that job, and I suddenly just had this the day I was meant to take my flight back home to England, I was like, I feel like I'm meant to stay here for some reason, and I missed my flight on purpose, and I would never do things like that normally. So I don't know.
That was like a calling.
Yeah, really.
Yeah. I mean, at the time I just thought I'm just confused. But as you look back on your life, sometimes you see, you know, it's like, I think there's a famous graduation speech or something by Steve Jobs maybe, and he says that it really only makes sense when you look back on your life, how the dots connect. You're not necessarily going to see the sense of it when you're going forward, if you're kind of following your intuition.
It's like you can't really appreciate the mountains until you're driving past it. Yeah. And then you look back, like on our last road trip, where it's like, well, this is nice. And then, you know, once you're several miles back, you look at the rearview mirror and you're like, whoa.
Yeah.
We did. We were just there.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's rough, like, you know, giving another analogy of like taking a hike and climbing up and you're like, trying to breathe and you're like, God, this is hard. And then you get up there and you're like, wow, like I climbed this whole mountain. You look back and you're like, wow, look at what I did.
Yes.
Like, it's gorgeous. Oh my God. Look at how I made it here.
Very much.
And it's interesting because then I remember well over a decade ago, mm-hmm. you know, us doing some mantra meditation together, some kirtan. Mm-hmm. And
a decade ago, let me orient myself.
So a decade ago, it would have been
2014. So, yeah.
Maybe we were in New York, maybe we were in Toronto, wherever.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but quite some time ago, I remember it was before your first album came out.
Okay,
Like a River.
Yeah.
And so
that was 2015. So,
okay. Yeah. So, right around a decade ago. And I mean, it was just, I'm still to this day so inspired how you went from like a river to do everything that you've done since.
Hmm.
You know, you, Rise was 2020, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. So for those unfamiliar, you put out an album called Rise with Willow Smith. And at that point, you had already been pretty much traveling the world, doing kirtans, pretty much selling out stadiums. I've been there. See with my own eyes.
Exaggerate.
And then you release this music with an incredibly influential individual, Willow Smith, who's also incredibly gifted herself.
Yeah.
And you came together and based off what I've seen, it was the first time since... I'm sure you've gotten this joke so many times in your life. Are you George Harrison? If you had a dime, anyway.
It's not even a joke. People really think that I am. Like 100% think, believe it. Before I've even said I'm not, they're like, so you're George Harrison's dad.
And if you're like, no, they're like, no, I don't believe her.
I had my t-shirt with him on my back. Yeah. So, just to confuse it a little bit.
Since him, the reason I bring up is it's practically since him, you have brought to the mainstream media bhakti. Kirtan, mantra meditation. I mean, still this day, you know, people will be going around singing My Sweet Lord by George Harrison, Hare Krishna. And it's been a half a century practically since music meditation had been brought so mainstream. And you did that with Will Smith. And it's just, you have people from all around the world who don't even know what they're doing, some of them, that they're just chanting these mantras and they're feeling it. They're like, yeah, something about her music just makes me happy.
Yeah.
Because even if you don't know fire's hot, if you touch it, it still burns. Yeah. Just like if you don't know the mantras work, they still will.
Yeah.
And so what was that transition like from going to be like a relatively withdrawn, more introverted, I don't even want to be in front of a mic, to becoming, I mean, internationally known and famous for sharing bhakti, sharing kirtan and mantra music in a way that so many people can access it.
Again, you know, I think it's been so gradual that it's felt fairly natural. I think for people who, you know, say you go viral on social media or something, you go from being completely anonymous to like, everyone in the world knows you as that guy the next day.
Right.
For me, it's just been so gradual. It's been 15 plus years of doing this. And I think the longer you do something and if you try and do it sincerely and also if it's, you know, I believe if it's divinely aligned, you're going to keep getting a yes energy with what you're doing. Like you may find that, okay, yeah, I'm going to change and do something else. But if it keeps happening and you keep kind of, you know, it's almost like digging for water in that place, then something starts to coalesce. I mean, at the very least, you become known for doing that thing, even if it's within a small, you know, small community of people. But I think, sometimes it's just a matter of timing of, you know, who, what, where. You're standing in the right place and you happen to be the person who's chosen to do something for whatever reason. But it's definitely been a struggle with my nature to keep, pushing myself, edging myself forward, because I can get a lot of anxiety. I love being with people, but it can also be draining when you're doing, you know, bigger events and things like that. And also I think that when you're doing something that's somewhat, wouldn't say unique, but if not that many others are doing it, it's both a good thing, but then there's also a lot of, over time, if people consider you to be successful doing something, there's a lot of expectation that's there, you know, and you can put that expectation on yourself as well. And so things take on this kind of grandiose like energy when you're like, no, I'm still doing the same thing that I've always done. But yeah, it's a matter of really, you got to really get to know yourself and know how to talk to yourself. You know, in those moments where you may be like, I can't do this. And have good people in your life who can talk to you when you can't talk to yourself.
Yeah, and support you.
Yeah.
Sure. Good support system.
My sister and my husband, my mom, my dad, they've all dealt with me many, many times when I'm like, ah. Yeah.
And I'm wondering, you know, a lot of musicians, artists in general use their art and music as an outlet for, you know, their anxiety or any emotions that they're experiencing, whether they're positive, or negative. And I assume you do that as well. And I'm wondering, you know, is there a vast difference? You spoke a little bit about how getting on stage and singing, you feel naked. And is it still a solace to perform your music on stage versus in private? And is there such a big difference there? Or can you still kind of tap in? Or, you know, Madhu sometimes, you know, when he goes on stage, he talks about how he has an on switch. Like he has to like, you know, kind of like
perform.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And, you know, Kirtan is not really such a performance, or at least, you know, it's not supposed to be.
Yes.
And so, I'm wondering.
Yeah, what great questions. I think, like you said, because Kirtan is not... So I feel at this point, my music kind of spans a range between traditional Kirtan, which is, you know, call and response, chanting of mantras, devotional bhakti-inspired music, which still has a lot of, you know, traditional... lyrics, maybe in Sanskrit or other languages, that are not written by me. So even when I sing them, I still feel like I'm being empowered by whoever wrote these words, and I'm singing their words. And then I think since the collaboration with Willow, even though I had written the lyrics for Like a River, which was my one song in English that I had done from a long time back. And shockingly, like people liked it. I mean, I was almost, I would never have even made it into a song if my friend Gauravani had not, you know, thought that it was actually just a poem. It wasn't meant to be a song. So I hadn't then written any other English lyrics for songs, and I didn't grow up. I grew up singing them like from songs I would hear, but not my own lyrics. So I think since the collaboration with Willow, which just sort of how it came about, I was starting to feel like I really need to express my own words. I need to put things in my own words. Partly because of that cathartic sort of experience of that you're referring to. Because sometimes with mantra, you feel like or with Kirtan, it's really not about you. You're really just trying to I guess, channel something for others in service. And it's not, you should ideally be as much out of the picture as possible. But I almost felt like I need to express my own words. And for her, she was coming from a place of being fascinated with mantra. And of course, she's well experienced as a singer-songwriter of expressing her thoughts and emotions and song. So that meeting in the middle place was really interesting. And I think she stretched herself. But also for me, it was an experience of gaining confidence in something that I didn't really have confidence in at all. And it was really, we created that album in a very short space of time. It was 14 days. And, we actually didn't even meet every day.
Wow.
Because she was actually working on her whatever was going to be her latest album at the time. She was in studio working on that. So we were only meeting every 2 or 3 days. And it was kind of like, okay, we'll meet for like an hour, go through some chords, and then I'll go away and write some lyrics, and then we'll come in, back into the studio and record. Just record, you know?
Yeah. Wow.
And I've never like prayed so much, because I thought that that was what we should do, but I really didn't have confidence that I could do it.
Mm.
But Willow's, you know, she was so encouraging and empowering, and I think, yeah, we were really blessed to come out with something that was appreciated by us and by others. So from that point on, I was like, okay, I think there's validity to both spaces, like what you're talking about, that I can, it's a very different experience for me when I'm just leading kirtan. I do feel like I can let my fears and anxieties go and just dive into that. It's a timeless space of sacred sound.
Mm-hmm.
But I still have very limited experience actually with sharing my own lyrics and songs. But I would imagine that, I think that also is, I think if you have a connection to your voice and your heart, and that's a way which you express, as soon as you just do it, you get out of your mind and you just get into it, you know?
That's what they say, is that from a space of thinking to feeling. And
yeah.
I mean, this is one thing that's always stood out about you. To me, is that because I can struggle, I often struggle with performing or entertaining, where it's like, I get on stage and then there's a sense of like, oh, now I have to crowd, because it's, I am like you in the way that's extremely unnatural and uncomfortable standing in front of people. I think public speaking is one of the biggest fears in the world. Yeah. And what to speak of public singing.
Yeah.
And I think if we considered speaking versus singing, I tend to think public singing is probably more scary.
Really? I feel like speaking is more scary.
Oh, interesting. Mm. Yeah. For me, I guess.
But I feel like you're a natural, like what they say, like gift of the gab. Like, I feel like you can talk and you.
I definitely don't stop.
I mean, in a complimentary way, you know?
I understand. I appreciate, just in the same way, whereas I can see you and I'm like, wow, like when you sing, and it's like you go into that space. I mean, we were talking about earlier how it's like you're enraptured when you're singing. For me, I have to like remind myself, like go into meditation, especially with kirtan. Again, those not familiar with kirtan meditation, where it's call and response mantras, you are becoming an instrument of service to provide mantras for others, as opposed to say, look how
here
great
I am.
And that's to your point of like, let me be, try to not be in the front of the stage and just to be there to support.
Yeah.
And so I myself get uncomfortable in that space, and I have to remind myself to like snap back into it, like you're here to serve, like get in the meditation.
Yeah.
Whereas for you, it just seems so natural, and as you speak, I feel like I've been able to see that, where you're like, you're there, and then it's like you almost close your eyes and it's like you go to that inner creative deep world of just like express. And even when you sing, it's, you move people to tears, you move us to emotions, because it's as if you've become expert in the ability to go into that space of the emotion of the sound, because that's really what music is 100% of people like music. It's just what kind of music. And we like it because we connect our emotions to the presenter, and you have seemingly develop that skill. Maybe it's natural. I'm sure it's natural with skill, but to present in a way that people just feel the music.
Mm. I think there's a certain, I think it's probably something you can learn. And then I think probably to some degree, it's a innate ability that many artists have to feel deeply and transmute that feeling or that idea in some way, in whatever is their chosen medium. And I don't regard myself as a great artist, but I know that that inclination has always been there for me. So I'm sure, you know, the more you do something, the more it becomes, it's not that you're going to get better and better and then you're going to become some genius, but it becomes more natural, just as walking, breathing, talking, the things that we've been practicing since childhood. We get a sense of, okay, I have a sense of how to do this, or what I need to do and what's not helpful in this moment, like that, you know. You refine it a little bit. But I wanted to share, I used to do freelance writing for some arts magazines, and I was interviewing this artist one time who is a performer of a classical Indian genre called Drupad, which is very, it's considered to be the most ancient. The Indian classical music has different different styles that come from different regions, and just to oversimplify it, but Drupad is considered to be the most ancient. It's very connected to spirituality. It's a very slow, meditative unfolding of the music. And she's a relatively young artist. Also, as a woman, it's a little more uncommon to be a traditional performer of that. So I was interviewing her, and I was asking her something along those lines of how do you sort of, you're performing, but you're also, it's a meditation. And I can't remember what the question was, but the answer that she gave really stuck with me, and it really helped me as well with what I do. And at that time, I was not really doing what I'm doing now. I was more writing and sort of doing things on the side. But she said, you know, as I'm singing, as I'm unfolding the melody, the raga, it's almost like you're kind of manifesting a color or a picture in front of you that's in between you and the audience, and you're both looking at it.
Wow.
But it's not about you.
That's stunning.
Yeah. So through sound, you're creating something that you're also looking at and responding to as the quote unquote performer. And I was like, wow, that really makes sense to me. And that's, yeah, that to hear someone express that, who is called upon to more traditionally perform in the sense that the audience are just sitting and listening.
Watching, yeah.
And you could easily get caught up in your own sort of how do I look right now? Do I sound good? All the ego type thoughts that can be there. But to be able to feel that, and she said something about then just being in service of the music that's kind of manifesting. Mm. Yeah. Really blew me away.
Wow. Really, what a perfect way to put that and envision it in real time.
Yeah. Like,
that's amazing.
Yeah.
What are some specific ways in which you go into that space? I mean, I'm curious, not only how do you go into the space of being an instrument per se and being of service, but again, as somebody who has acknowledgement throughout the world and that can be pulled in different directions.
Yeah.
What are the ways, let's think of the mindfulness tools that you use, the psychological workings and tools that you use to show up not only authentically and do your thing, which is to be of service and create amazing art, but do it in such a way as to still navigate the success and the fame that comes with it?
I think from a young age, it was sort of... I think drilled in is not the right word because that sounds kind of intense, but it was definitely impressed upon me that the identity of you know, to identify as a servant, meaning that you see yourself primarily as someone who's there to offer your whatever you have, your help, your resources to others, for the benefit of others, and primarily also, you know, to divine source, to God. And then also, you know, certain core teachings of bhakti, for example, from the sacred text Bhagavad Gita about life and death. You know, we were learning about these things from like 4 years old in school and learning the verses and things like that. And I think I used to call it Gita glasses because it's like when you have that input, it's glasses through which you're seeing the world, and you know that whatever you may have at, you know, one particular moment, it could be gone the next moment, and it doesn't really define anything about who you are. Like I know I've definitely perceived people relating to me differently since they have seen me connected with people who may be very renowned, very famous, but I know I'm still the same person, you know, and if I become infamous in some way, I'd make a mistake, or if everyone says, oh, we hate Jahnavi's music now, I'll still be the same person. And so to try to hold on to that core of who you are, I think for whatever reason, I've always felt like that's really vital because life is going to take you on a bit of a ride, and Yeah, if you can try to be authentic and try to be true to yourself while still allowing yourself to grow and learn and evolve, that seems like a success to me. So I think whether I'm in front of, you know, I've been at different points in front of large audiences or small audiences of sometimes people that are very wealthy or very influential. Or then sometimes I close my eyes and I think, well, I could just be by myself right now in front of my altar at home and try to synchronize or align whoever you would be in any of those places with whoever you are in all of those other places. Like, let me not be a different person at any point. I don't know if I'm articulating that well, but it's like
you did.
Yeah,
I'm totally impressed with how you expressed that. Actually, I'm excited to continue these conversations for, I mean, at least 80 more years together. But
that's optimistic. We're around then.
65. As we wrap up today's session, a question that we like to ask, based off what you just shared, is how would you define success? Because you've clearly experienced success in many ways, and everyone has a slightly different understanding of it. But how does John V. Harrison define success?
I'm not known for being brief in my words, but
good.
Let me try and be brief because, I think if you.
You don't have
about
to be
this
brief.
For a second.
Yeah, we don't like brief. Neither of us are brief.
You don't have to be brief.
There's nothing brief about us.
I think it's success if you can feel a sense of contentment with who you are, what you have, what you don't have, with your relationships in your life, and with a sense of identity and purpose in this world. And that can, I feel like the word purpose can get thrown around in a very, again, grandiose kind of way where it's like, I've got to find the one thing. But I feel like there's a core to what all things are, you know. Is it about listening to people? Is it about serving others in some way? Is it about expression? Is it about protecting? You know, there's core sort of characteristics of different types of activities. And if you can know yourself better and try to align your nature with your work and, you know, find contentment because, like the Gita says, I mean, I don't even think about this verse very much, but it talks about incessant desires that are like, it's like that river flowing into the ocean at every moment. There's always going to be desires for more, and especially in the age of social media. There's a million other people to look at and compare yourself to them, and why has that person got more than me, or, you know, if all the if onlys. So to truly try to find contentment and try to at least, you know, for a short time in the day, connect with that inner space where, you know, according to what you believe and how much you've engaged with practices like meditation, it may be more or less familiar. But if you've never gone there, you know, go there. Like, that's what the partly what the song Rise was about, the title song of that EP. You know, the questions that rise within, don't ignore them. Try and take some of that time. And I know that for a lot of people, that could be really daunting because it's kind of like, I don't know, it's just so unknown that it's you fear the unknown. And I do think that that's where art, music, experiences with, expression, beautiful expression, they can take us to that place very easily. So in one sense, that could, you could say that's essential for a successful life, you know, to try and find that contentment within. And I think a relationship to the essence of life, you know, to serve, to give, to love, and to connect with a higher power, I think that is really, I can't see success being very achievable without that, actually, at least not in my limited experience.
Beautifully said.
I mean, I've never had a superficial conversation with you.
That's because of you. That's because of the questions.
Well, I will say Rutty has this gift of also depth. For me, it takes a little effort, but I mean, trying to get to the bottom of that ocean. You have such a gift of being able to express yourself, not only from a unique and special perspective, but in a way in which you present information so that it's like those of us who are on the outside, who may not have taste for all these things, it's like you give us access. And for that, I'm just so grateful. I'm so appreciative of you sharing your time with us today and actually allowing us a perspective. I feel like I got a snapshot, per se, of like who is John V. Harrison. And as important as like, how can you take these lessons that you've experienced and give them out to others so that we don't have to do all the hard work you have put into and controlling the mind to become as successful as you have in the various areas that you are successful. And I mean, it's such an inspiration. I'm so grateful to have your friendship.
Thank you.
You know, we were so enlivened talking about this conversation we get to have with you because we knew it would go to such a deep place.
Yeah.
And I want everyone listening to immediately go listen. Like, now that this is fresh, I want them to go listen to music. So tell everyone a little bit more of how we can stay in touch with you. How can we listen to you more?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of music on all different, all the platforms that you could choose from. I think on YouTube as well, there's a lot more live kind of stuff, just because that's where a lot of those things end up. It's quite, can be quite different sometimes to also studio recordings. So yeah, you can check that out wherever.
And just search your name, right? John A.V. Harrison.
J-A-H-N-A-V-I.
Space Harrison. Yeah.
Got it.
Great. But you also have some courses.
I do. There's a wonderful learning platform called Vani, where some of our friends also have courses.
One of the best.
I did a course there called Heal with Sound. So that's an introduction to mantra meditation, also just sound in general, engaging with healing sound vibration. And
and that's V-A-N-I. Search V-A-N-I. I think it's Vani. Just Vani.com if you look it up. That'll be great.
Yeah.
And then you also have
Patreon.
Patreon, right? Yeah. John A.V. Music.
John A.V. Music, yeah. And we meet twice a month on Zoom. So it's a really sweet group. I mean, there's a lot of people on there who are like, I'm good. I don't need to come to the Zoom calls, but those who do, we have a really fun time. And
it's deeply nourishing.
Yeah.
Right there.
Yeah. And it's I'm grateful for platforms like that, because as we know, the world is not really tipped in favor of artists and creative people kind of thriving.
Yeah.
You know, especially after COVID is also a whole other world. Mm-hmm. What to speak of in the realm of spiritual music, because it's never going to, well, I shouldn't say never, but it's likely not what's going to be, you know, on the radio, you know, top hits. Yeah. It's appreciated to have those ways that people can offer support and also tap into something that gives value to their life. So yeah, I'm looking forward to, I hope I'm going to meet some of your listeners in person.
You will. Actually, tomorrow in there. In the concert.
Yeah.
I really thank you for your time. Thank you for your depth. I feel like I've learned so much today. Mm-hmm. And I'm just so excited for myself to do all the things you just suggested. So thank you again
both.
For your
I really
time,
appreciate this conversation as well.